to the waiting wall, and then dragged Holland's body to its feet. 6. The first thing Kell saw when he stepped into White London was Lila brandishing 2 knives, both of them bloody. She'd managed to cut a path through several men. Their bodies littered the street, but 4 or 5 were circling her, and more hung back and watched with hungry eyes and whispered in their guttural tongue.
"Pretty red blood. Smells like magic. Open her up. See what's inside."
Kell lowered Holland's body to the ground and stepped forward.
"Was Vrensk Torijk?"
he boomed, rumbling the ground for good measure. "Back away from her." A ripple went through the crowd when they saw him. Some fled, but others, too curious, took only a step or two back. The moment Lila saw him, her eyes narrowed.
"You are very, very late," she growled.
Her usual calm had cracked, and underneath she looked tense with fear.
"And why are you wet?"
Kell looked down at his dripping clothes. He ran his hands along them, willing the water out, and a moment later he stood dry, except for the puddle at his boots.
"I had a snag,"
he said, gesturing back toward Holland. But several dark-eyed citizens were already beginning to investigate the body. One pulled out a knife and pressed it to the dying Antari's wrist.
"Stop!"
ordered Kell, slamming the assailants backward with a gust of wind. He hauled the Antari up over his shoulder.
"Leave him!"
spat Lila.
"Let them pick his bones clean!"
But Kell shook his head.
"If you don't," she said, "they'll pick ours."
Kell turned and saw the men and women closing in around them. The people of White London knew the orders, knew the Danes would take the head of any who touched their guest from afar. But it was night, and the lure of fresh magic and Holland's defenceless state.
"Let me make a crown from him," murmured one. "I bet there's still blood left," said another,
seemed to tip them off their senses. Lila and Kell moved backward until their heels met the bridge.
"Lila," said Kell as they backed onto it.
"Yeah?"
she said, her voice low and tight.
"Run!"
She didn't hesitate, but turned and took off sprinting across the bridge. Kell's hand shot up, and with it, a wall of stone, a barricade to buy them time. And then he, too, was running, as fast as he could, with Holland's body over his narrow shoulder and the black magic surging in his veins. Kell was halfway across the bridge, and Lila nearly to the other side, when the commoners finally tore down the wall and surged after them onto the structure. The moment he reached the opposite bank, Kell sank to the ground and touched his bloody hand to the floor of the bridge.
"Us, Steno!"
he commanded, just as Holland had, and instantly the bridge began to crumble, plunging stone and bodies down into the icy Sjalt. Kell fought for breath, his pulse thudding his ears. Lila was standing over him, glaring at Holland's body.
"Is he dead?"
"Close enough,"
said Kell, getting to his feet, hauling the Antari's body with him.
"I hope you made him suffer,"
she spat, turning toward the looming castle.
"No," thought Kell as they set off. "He's suffered long enough."
He could feel the people watching as they moved through the streets, but no one came out of their houses. They were too near the castle now, and the castle had eyes. Soon it loomed before them, the stone citadel behind its high wall, the archway like a gaping mouth, leading onto the darkened courtyard and its statues. The stone hummed against Kell's palm, and he realized it wasn't calling only to him now, it was calling to its other half. Beside him, Lila drew yet another blade from beneath her coat. But this one wasn't an ordinary knife. It was a royal half-sword from Red London. Kell's mouth fell open.
"Where did you get that?" he asked.
"Nicked it off the guard who tried to kill me,"
she said, admiring the weapon. He could see the markings scrawled across the blade. Metal that disabled magic.
"Like I said, you can never have too many knives."
Kell held out his hand. "Can you spare it?" Lila considered him a moment, then shrugged and handed it over. Kell fingered the grip as she drew out her pistol and began to reload it.
"Are you ready?"
she asked, spinning the chamber. Kell gazed through the gate at the waiting castle.
"No."
At that, she offered him the sharpest edge of a grin.
"Good," she said. "The ones who think they're ready always end up dead."
Kell managed a ghost of a smile.
"Thank you, Lila."
"For what?"
But Kell didn't answer, only stepped forward into the waiting dark. 13. The Waiting King. 1. A cloud of black smoke hung in the air of the white throne room, a patch of night against the pale backdrop. Its edges frayed and curled and faded, but its centre was smooth and glossy, like the fragment of stone in Athos's hand, or the surface of the scrying board, which was exactly what the king had summoned with it. Athos Dane sat on his throne, his sister's body in her own chair beside him, and turned the stone over in his hand as he watched the shifting image of Cal and his companion pass into the courtyard of his castle. Where the stone's other half had gone, so had its gaze. The father's London had been little more than a blur, but as Cal and his companion travelled nearer, the image in the surface had grown crisp and clear. Athos had watched the events unfold across the various cities. Kell's flight, the girl's cunning, his servant's failure and his sister's foolishness, the wounded prince, and the slaughtered Antari. His fingers tightened on the talisman. Athos had watched it all unfold with a mixture of amusement and annoyance, and, admittedly, excitement. He bristled at the loss of Holland, but a spike of pleasure ran through him at the thought of killing Kell. Astrid would be furious. Athos rolled his head and considered his sister's body propped up on its throne, the charm pulsing at her throat. A London away, she might still be wreaking havoc, but here she sat, still and pale as the sculpted stone beneath her. Her hands draped on the arms of the chair and wisps of white hair ribboned over her closed eyes. Athos tisked at his sister.
"Aus vosser Nochten," he said. "You should have let me go to the masquerade instead. Now my plaything is dead and yours has made an awful mess. What do you have to say for yourself?"
Of course she did not answer. Athos wrapped his long fingers on the edge of his throne, thinking. If he broke the spell and woke her, she would only complicate things. No, he had given her the chance to deal with Kell in her own way, and she had failed. It was his turn now. Athos smiled and rose to his feet. His fingers tightened on the stone, and the image of Kell dissolved into smoke and then into nothing. Power thrummed through the king, the magic hungry for more. But he held it in place, feeding it only what it needed. It was a thing to be controlled, and Athos had never been a lenient master.
"Do not worry yourself, Astrid," he said to the spellbound queen. "I will make things right."
And then he smoothed his hair, readjusted the collar of his white cloak, and went to greet his guests. 2. The white London fortress rose in a column of sharp light out of the shadowed stone courtyard. Lila slipped into the forest of statues to fulfill her part of the plan, while Kell made his way toward the waiting steps. He laid Holland's body on a stone bench and descended the stairs, one hand curled around the royal blade, the other around the black London talisman. "Go ahead, Kell," Holland had goaded. "Use the stone. It will consume you faster, but you might just win." He wouldn't. He vowed not to. His recent use in battle had only spurred the darkness on. black thread now coiled up past his elbow and toward his shoulder, and Kell couldn't afford to lose any more of himself. As it was, every heartbeat seemed to spread the poison more. His pulse thudded in his ears as he climbed the steps. Kell wasn't foolish enough to think he could sneak up on Athos, not here. He had to know that Kell was coming, yet he let him approach his doors without assault. The 10 empty-eyed guards that usually flanked the stairs were gone. The way cleared for Kell. The unhindered path was itself a challenge, an act of arrogance befitting White London's king. Kell would rather have faced an army than the unmanned doors and whatever waited on the other side. Every forward step that went unchecked, unobstructed, only made him more nervous for the next. By the time he reached the landing at the top, his hands were trembling and his chest was tight. He brought his shaking fingertips to the doors and forced a last breath of cold air into his lungs. And then he pushed. The castle doors opened under his touch, requiring neither force nor magic, and Kell's shadow spilled forward into the corridor. He took a step over the threshold, and the torches of the chamber lit with pale fire, trailing up against the vaulted ceilings and down the hall, and revealing the faces of the dozen guards who lined it. Kell sucked in a breath, bracing himself. But the soldiers did not move.
"They won't lay a hand on you," came a silvery voice. "Not unless you try to flee."
Athos Jane stepped out of the shadows, dressed in his usual pristine white, his faded features rendered colourless by the torchlight.
"The pleasure of killing you will be mine, and mine alone."
Athos held the other half of the black stone loosely in one hand, and a thrum of power spiked through Kell's body at the sight of it.
"Astrid will sulk, of course," continued Athos. "She wanted you as a pet, but I have always maintained that you were more trouble alive than dead, and I think recent events would serve as evidence of that."
"It's over, Athos," said Kell. "Your plan failed."
Athos smiled grimly.
"You are like Holland," he said. "Do you know why he could not take the crown? He never relished war. He saw bloodshed and battle as means to an end, a destination. But I have always relished the journey. And I promise you I'm going to savor this."
His fingers tightened over his half of the stone and smoke poured forth. Kell didn't hesitate. He willed the armor and the guards within from their places against the wall and into a barricade between himself and the king. But it was not enough. The smoke went over and under and through, and reached for Kell, trying to twine around his arms. He willed the wall of guards forward into Athos and sliced at the smoke with the royal sword. But the king did not drop the stone, and the magic was clever and moved around Kell's blade, catching hold of his wrists and turning instantly into forged chains that ran not down to the floor but out to the walls on either side of the antechamber hall. The metal pulled taut, forcing Kell's arms wide as Athos vaulted over the guards and landed smoothly, effortlessly in front of him. The chains cinched, cutting into Kell's already wounded wrists, and his stolen sword tumbled from his fingers as Athos produced a silver whip. It uncoiled from his hand, cascading to the floor, its forged tip licking the stone.
"Shall we see how well you suffer?"
As Athos went to raise the whip, Kell wrapped his fingers around the chains. The blood on his palm was nearly dry, but he grabbed the metal hard enough to reopen the gash.
"As Orensa,"
he said an instant before the whip cracked through the air. And the chains released Kell just in time for him to dodge the forked silver. He rolled, fetching up the discarded blade and pressed his bleeding palm to the floor stones, remembering Holland's attack.
"Ast Steno,"
he said. The floor stone cracked into a dozen sharp shards under his fingers. Kell rose, the jagged pieces rising with him, and when he cast his hand out, they shot forward toward the king. Athos casually held up his hand in response. The stone clutched within, and a shield took shape in front of him. the slivers of rock shattering uselessly against it. Athos smiled darkly.
"Oh, yes," he said, lowering the shield. "I'm going to enjoy this."
Lila wove through the forester statues, their heads bowed in surrender, hands up in plea. She circled the vaulting fortress. It looked like a cathedral if a cathedral were built on stilts and had no stained glass, only steel and stone. Still, the fortress was long and narrow, like a church, with one main set of doors on the north side and three smaller, albeit still impressive, entrances at the south, east, and west sides. Lila's heart hammered as she approached the south entrance, the path to the stairs lined by stone supplicants. She would have preferred to scale the walls and go in by an upper window, something more discreet than marching up the stairs. But she had no rope and no hook, and even if she'd had the necessary outfittings for such a jaunt, Kell had warned her against it. The Danes, he had told her, trusted no one, and the castle was as much trap as it was a king's seat. "The main doors face north," he'd said. "I'll go by those. You enter through the south doors."
"Isn't that dangerous?"
"In this place," he'd answered, "everything is dangerous. But if the doors deny you, at least the fall won't be as steep." So Lila had agreed to go by the doors, despite her nagging fear that they were traps. It was all a trap. She reached the south stairs and pulled her horned mask down over her eyes before scaling the steps. At the top, the doors gave way without resistance, and again Lila's gut told her to go, to run the other way. But for the first time in her life, she ignored the warning and stepped inside. The space beyond the doors was dark, but the moment she crossed the threshold, lanterns flared to light, and Lila froze. Dozens of guards lined the walls like living suits of armour, their heads twisted toward the open door, toward her, and she steeled herself against the impending assault. But it never came. Kell had told her that White London was a throne taken and held by force, and that this type of ascension didn't usually inspire loyalty. The guards here were clearly bound by magic, trapped under some kind of control spell. But that was the problem with forcing people to do things they didn't want to do. You had to be so specific. They had no choice but to follow orders, but they probably weren't inclined to go above and beyond them. A slow smile drew across her lips. Whatever order King Athos had given his guards, it didn't seem to extend to her. Their empty eyes followed her as she moved down the hall as calmly as possible, as if she belonged there, as if she had not come to kill their queen. She wondered as she moved past them how many wanted her to succeed. The halls in the Red Palace had been labyrinthine, but here there was a simple grid of lines and intersections, further proof that the castle had once been something like a church. One hall gave on to another before putting her out in front of the throne room, just as Kell had said it would. But Kell had also said the hall would be empty, and it was not. A boy stood in front of the throne room door. He was younger than Lila and thin in a wiry way, and unlike the guards with their empty eyes, his were dark and bruised and feverish. When he saw her coming, he drew his sword.
"Vusk!"
he ordered. Lila's brow furrowed.
"Vusk!"
he said again.
"Ostriakev, Vusk!"
"Hey, you!"
she said curtly.
"Move!"
The boy started speaking low and urgently in his own language. Lila shook her head and drew the knife with the brass knuckles from its sheath.
"Get out of my way!"
Feeling she had made herself understood, Lila strode forward toward the door. But the boy lifted his sword, put himself squarely in her path, and said,
"Vusk!"
"Look!" she snapped.
"I have no idea what you're saying."
The young guard looked around, exasperated.
"But I would strongly advise you to go and pretend this interaction never took place, and...
Hey, what the bloody hell do you think you're doing?"
The boy had shaken his head and muttered something under his breath, and then he brought his sword to his own arm and began to cut.
"'Hey!'
Lila said again as the boy gritted his teeth and drew a second line, and then a third.
"'Stop that!'
She went to catch his wrist, but he stopped cutting the pattern and looked her in the eyes, and said,
"'Leave!'
For a moment Lila thought she'd heard him wrong, and then she realized he was speaking English. When she looked down, she saw that he'd carved some kind of symbol into his skin.
"'Leave!'
he said again.
"'Now!'
"'Get out of my way,' countered Lila.
"'I can't,
boy,' she warned.
"'I can't,'
he said again.
"'I have to guard the door.'
"'Or what?'
challenged Lila.
"'There is no or what.'
He pulled aside the collar of his shirt to show a mark, angry and black, scarred into his skin.
"'He ordered me to guard the door, so I must guard it.'
Lila frowned. The mark was different from Kell's, but she understood what it must be, some kind of seal.
"'What happens if you step aside?'
she asked.
"'I can't.'
"'What happens if I cut you down?'
"'I'll die.'
He said both things with sad and equal certainty. "'What a mad world,' thought Lila.
"'What's your name?'
she asked.
"'Belloc.'
"'How old are you?'
"'Old enough.'
There was a proud tilt to his jaw and a fire in his eyes she recognized. A defiance. But he was still young, too young for this.
"'I don't want to hurt you, Belloc,' she said.
"'Don't make me. I wish I didn't have to.'
He squared himself to her, holding his sword with both hands, his knuckles white.
"'You'll have to go through me.'
Lila growled and gripped her knife.
"'Please,' he added, "'please go through me.'
Lila gave him a long, hard look.
"'How?'
she said at last. His brows went up in question.
"'How do you want to die?'
she clarified. The fire in his eyes wavered for an instant, and then he recovered and said,
"'Quickly!'
Lila nodded. She lifted her knife and he lowered his sword just a fraction, just enough. And then he closed his eyes and began to whisper something to himself. Lila didn't hesitate. She knew how to use a knife, how to wound, and how to kill. She closed the gap between them and drove the blade between Belloc's ribs and up before he'd even finished his prayer. There were worse ways to go, but she still swore under her breath at Athos and Astrid and the whole forsaken city as she lowered the boy's body to the floor. She wiped her blade on the hem of her shirt and sheathed the knife as she stepped up to the waiting doors of the throne room. A circle of symbols was etched into the wood, 12 marks in all. She brought her hand to the dial, remembering Kell's instructions. "'Think of it as a clock face,' he'd said, drawing the motion in the air. 1, 7, 3, 9. Now she drew it with her finger, touching the symbol at the first hour, then drawing her fingertip down and across the circle to the 7th, around and up to the 3, and straight through the middle to the 9. "'Are you certain you've got it?' Kell had asked, and Lila had sighed and blown the hair out of her eyes.
"'I told you I'm a fast learner.'
At first nothing happened, and then something passed between her fingers and the wood, and a lock slid within.
"'Told you,'
she murmured, pushing the door open. 3. Athos was laughing. It was a horrible sound. The hall around them was in disarray, the hollow guards in a heap, the hangings torn and the torches scattered on the ground still burning. A bruise blossomed beneath Kell's eye, and Athos's white cloak was singed and flecked with blackish blood.
"'Shall we go again?'
said Athos. Before the words had even left his lips, a bolt of dark energy shot out like lightning from the front of the king's shield. Kell threw up his hand, and the floor shot up between them, but he wasn't fast enough. The electricity slammed into him and hurled him backward into the front doors of the castle, hard enough to split the wood. He coughed, breathless and dizzy from the blow, but he had no chance to recover. The air crackled and came alive, and another bolt struck him so hard that the door splintered and broke, and Kell went tumbling back into the night. For an instant, everything went black, and then his vision came back, and he was falling. The air sprang up to catch him, or at least muffle the fall, but he still hit the stone courtyard at the base of the stairs hard enough to crack bone. The royal blade went skittering away several feet. Blood dripped from Kell's nose to the stones.
"We both hold swords,"
chided Athos as he descended the stairs, his white cloak billowing regally behind him.
"Yet you choose to fight with a pin."
Kell struggled to his feet, cursing. The king seemed unaffected by the black stone's magic. His veins had always been dark, and his eyes remained their usual icy blue. He was clearly in control, and for the first time Kell wondered if Holland had been right, if there was no such thing as balance, only victors and victims. Had he already lost? The dark magic hummed through his body, begging to be used.
"You're going to die, Kell," said Athos when he reached the courtyard. "You might as well die trying."
Smoke poured from Athos's stone and shot forward, the tendrils of darkness turning to glossy black knife points as they surged toward Kell. He threw up his empty hand and tried to will the blades to stop, but they were made of magic, not metal, and they didn't yield, didn't slow. And then, the instant before the wall of knives shredded Kell, his other hand, the one bound to the stone, flew up as if on its own, and the order echoed through his mind, "Protect me." No sooner had the thought formed than it became real. Shadow wrapped around him, colliding with the knife-tipped smoke. Power surged through Kell's body, fire and ice water and energy all at once, and he gasped as the darkness spread farther beneath his skin and over it, ribboning out from the stone, past his arm and across his chest, as the wall of magic deflected the attack and turned it back on Athos. The king dodged, striking the blades aside with a wave of his stone. Most rained down on the courtyard floor, but one found its mark and buried itself in Athos's leg. The king hissed and dug the knife point out. He cast it aside and smiled darkly as he straightened.
"That's more like it."
Myla's steps echoed through the throne room. The space was cavernous and circular and as white as snow, interrupted only by a ring of pillars around the edges and the two thrones on the platform in the middle, sitting side by side and carved out of a single piece of pale stone. One of the thrones sat empty. The other one held Astrid Dane. Her hair, so blonde it seemed colourless, was coiled like a crown around her head, wisps as fine as spider silk falling onto her face, which tipped forward as if she'd dozed off. Astrid was deathly pale and dressed in white, but not the soft whites of a fairy tale queen, no velvet or lace. No, this queen's clothes wrapped around her like armour, tapering sharply along her collar and down her wrists, and where others would have worn dresses, Astrid Dane wore tightly fitted pants that ran into crisp white boots. Her long fingers curled around the arms of the throne, half the knuckles marked by rings, though the only true colour on her came from the pendant hanging around her neck, the edges rimmed with blood. Lila stared at the motionless queen. Her pendant looked exactly like the one Rye had been wearing in Red London when he wasn't Rye. Her possession charm. And by the looks of it, Astrid Dane was still under its spell. Lila took a step forward, cringing as her boots echoed through the hollow room with unnatural clarity. Clever, thought Lila. The throne room's shape wasn't just an aesthetic decision. It was designed to carry sound. Perfect for a paranoid ruler. But despite the sound of Lila's steps, the queen never stirred. Lila continued forward, half expecting guards to burst forth from hidden corners, of which there were none, and rush to Astrid's aid. But no one came. "Serves you right," thought Lila. Hundreds of guards, and the only one to raise a sword, wanted to fall on it. Some queen. The pendant glittered against Astrid's chest, pulsing faintly with light. Somewhere, in another city, In another world she had taken another body, maybe the king or queen or the captain of the guard. But here she was defenseless. Lila smiled grimly. She would have liked to take her time, make the queen pay for Kell's sake, but she knew better than to test her luck. She slid her pistol from its holster. One shot, quick and easy and over. She raised the weapon, levelled it at the queen's head, and fired. The shot rang out through the throne room, followed instantly by a ripple of light, a rumble like thunder, and a blinding pain in Lila's shoulder. It sent her staggering back, the gun tumbling from her hand. She gripped her arm with a gasp, cussing roundly as blood seeped through her shirt and coat. She'd been shot. The bullet had clearly ricocheted, but off of what? Lila squinted at Astrid on her throne and realized that the air around the woman in white wasn't as empty as it seemed. It rippled in the gunshot's wake, the direct assault revealing air that shivered and shone, flecked with glassy shards of light. With magic. Lila gritted her teeth as her hand fell from her wounded shoulder, and her torn coat, to her waist. She retrieved her knife, still flecked with Belloc's blood, and inched closer until she was standing squarely in front of the throne. Her breath bounced against the nearly invisible barrier, and brushed back against her own cheeks. She raised the knife slowly, bringing the tip of the blade forward until it met the edge of the spell. The air crackled around the knife point, glinting like frost, but did not give. Lila swore under her breath as her gaze shifted down through the air, over the queen's body before landing on the floor at her feet. There her eyes narrowed. On the stone at the base of the throne were symbols. She couldn't read them, of course, but the way they wove together, the way they wove around the entire throne and the queen made it clear they were important. Links in the chain of a spell. And links could be broken. Lila crouched and brought the blade to the nearest symbol's edge. She held her breath and dragged the knife along the ground, scratching away at the marking from her side until she'd erased a narrow band of ink or blood or whatever the spell had been written in. She didn't want to know. The air around the throne lost its shimmer and dimmed, and as Lila stood, wincing, she knew that whatever enchantment had been protecting the queen was gone. Lila's fingers shifted on her knife.
"Goodbye, Astrid," she said,
plunging the blade forward toward the queen's chest. But before the tip could tear the white tunic, a hand caught Lila's wrist. She looked down to see Astrid Dane's pale blue eyes staring up at her. Awake, the queen's mouth drew into a thin, sharp smile.
"Bad little thief," she whispered.
And then Astrid's grip tightened and searing pain tore up Lila's arm. She heard someone screaming, and it took her a moment to realize the sound was coming from her throat. Blood streaked Athos's cheek. Kell gasped for breath. The king's white cloak was torn, and shallow gashes marred Kell's leg, his wrist, his stomach. Half the statues in the courtyard around them lay toppled and broken, as the magic clashed, striking against itself like flint.
"I will take that black eye of yours," said Athos. "Wear it round my neck."
He lashed out again, and Kell countered will to will, stone to stone. But Kell was fighting two fights, one with the king and the other with himself. The darkness kept spreading, claiming more of him with every moment, every motion. He could not win. At this rate, he would either lose the fight or lose himself. Something had to give. Athos's magic found a fissure in Kell's shadow-drawn shield and hit him hard, cracking his ribs. Kell coughed, tasting blood as he fought to focus his vision on the king. He had to do something, and he had to do it soon. The royal half-sword glittered on the ground nearby. Athos lifted the stone to strike again.
"Is that all you have?"
Kell goaded through gritted teeth.
"The same tired tricks? You lack your sister's creativity."
Athos's eyes narrowed, and then he held out the stone and summoned something new. Not a wall, or a blade, or a chain. No, the smoke coiled around him, shaping itself into a sinister, curving shadow. A massive silver serpent with black eyes, its forked tongue flicking the air as it rose, taller than the king himself. Kell forced himself to give a low, derisive laugh, even though it hurt his broken ribs. He fetched the royal half-sword from the ground. It was chipped and slick with dust and blood, but he could still make out the symbols running down its metal length.
"I've been waiting for you to do that," he said. "Create something strong enough to kill me, since you clearly cannot do it yourself."
Athos frowned.
"What does it matter, the shape your death takes? It is still at my hand."
"You said you wanted to kill me yourself," countered Kell. "Well, I suppose this is as close as you can come. Go ahead and hide behind the stone's magic. Call it your own."
Athos let out a low growl.
"You're right," he said. "Your death should and will be mine."
He tightened his fingers around the stone, clearly intending to dispel the serpent. The snake, which had been slithering around the king, now stopped its course, but it did not dissolve. Instead, it turned its glossy black eyes on Athos the way Kell's mirror image had on Lila in her room. Athos glared up at the serpent, willing it away. When it did not obey his thought, he gave voice to the command.
"You submit to me,"
ordered Athos as the serpent flicked its tongue.
"You are my creation, and I am your..."
He never had the chance to finish. The serpent reared back and struck. Its fanged jaws closed over the stone in Athos's hand, and before the king could even scream, the snake had enveloped him. Its silver body coiled around his arms and chest, and then around his neck, snapping it with an audible crack. Kell sucked in a breath as Athos Dane's head slumped forward, the terrifying king reduced to nothing but a rag doll corpse. The serpent uncoiled, and the king's body tumbled forward to the broken ground. And then the serpent turned its shining black eyes on Kell. It slithered toward him with frightening speed, but Kell was ready. He drove the royal half-sword up into the serpent's belly. It pierced the snake's rough skin, the spellwork on the metal glowing for an instant before the creature's thrashing broke the blade in two. The snake shuddered and fell, dispelled to nothing but a shadow at Kell's feet. A shadow, and in the midst of it, a broken piece of black stone. 4. Lila's back hit the pillar hard. She crumpled to the stone floor of the throne room, and blood ran into her false eye as she struggled to push herself to her hands and knees. Her shoulder cried out with pain, but so did the rest of her. She tried not to think about it. Astrid, meanwhile, seemed to be having a grand time. She was smiling lazily at Lila like a cat with a kitchen mouse.
"I am going to cut that smile off your face," growled Lila as she staggered to her feet.
She had been in a lot of fights with a lot of people, but she'd never fought anyone like Astrid Dane. The woman moved with both jarring speed and awkward grace, one moment slow and smooth, the next striking so fast that it was all Lila could do to stay on her feet, stay alive. Lila knew she was going to lose. Lila knew she was going to die, but she'd be damned if it counted for nothing. Judging by the rumbling of the castle grounds around them, Kell had his hands full. The least she could do was keep the number of Danes he had to fight to one, buy him a little time. Honestly, what had happened to her? The Lila Bard of South London looked out for herself. That Lila would never waste her life on someone else. She'd never choose right over wrong so long as wrong meant staying alive. She'd never have turned back to help the stranger who helped her. Lila spit a mouthful of blood and straightened. Perhaps she never should have stolen the damned stone, but even here, and now, facing death in the form of a pale queen, she didn't regret it. She'd wanted freedom. She'd wanted adventure. And she didn't think she minded dying for it. She only wished dying didn't hurt so much.
"You've gotten in the way long enough,"
said Astrid, raising her hands in front of her. Lila's mouth quirked.
"I do seem to have a talent for that."
Astrid began to speak in that guttural tongue Lila had heard in the street. But in the Queen's mouth the words sounded different. Strange and harsh and beautiful, they poured from her lips, rustling like a breeze through rotting leaves. They reminded Lila of the music blanketing the crowd in Rye's parade, sound made physical, powerful. And Lila wasn't foolish enough to stand there and listen to it. Her pistol, now empty, lay discarded several feet away, her newest knife at the foot of the throne. She still had one dagger at her back, and she went for it, sliding the weapon free. But before the blade could leave her fingers, Astrid finished the incantation, and a wave of energy slammed into Lila, knocking the wind out of her lungs as she hit the floor and slid several feet. She rolled up into a crouch, gasping for air. The Queen was toying with her. Astrid's fingers rose as she prepared to strike again, and Lila knew it was her only chance. Her fingers tightened on the dagger, and she threw it, hard and fast and straight, at the Queen's heart. It flew right at Astrid, but instead of dodging, she simply reached out and plucked the metal out of the air with her bare hand. Lila's heart sank as the Queen snapped the blade in two and tossed the pieces aside, all without interrupting her spell. "Shit!" thought Lila, right before the stone floor beneath her began to rumble and shake. She fought to keep her footing and very nearly missed the wave of broken stone cresting over her head. Pebbles rained from above, and she dove out of the way just as the whole thing came crashing down. She was fast, but not fast enough. Pain tore up her right side, her leg from heel to knee, which was trapped beneath the rubble, pale stone flecked with fragments of whitened rock. No, not whitened rock, realized Lila with horror. Bones. Lila scrambled to free her leg, but Astrid was there, wrenching her onto her back and kneeling on her chest. Astrid reached down and ripped the horned mask from Lila's face, tossing it aside. She took hold of Lila's jaw and wrenched her face up to hers.
"Pretty little thing," said the Queen, "under all that blood."
"Burn in hell," spat Lila.
Astrid only smiled, and then the nails of her other hand sank into Lila's wounded shoulder. Lila bit back a scream and thrashed under the Queen's grip, but it was no use.
"If you're going to kill me," she snapped, "just do it already."
"Oh, I will," said Astrid, withdrawing her fingers from Lila's throbbing shoulder. "But not yet. When I have finished with Kel, I shall come back for you. And I shall take my time divesting you of your life. And when I'm done, I'll add you to my floor."
She held up her hand between them, showing Lila her fingertips, now stained with blood. It was such a vivid red against the Queen's pale skin.
"But first..."
Astrid brought a bloody finger to the place between Lila's eyes, tracing a pattern there. Lila fought as hard as she could to get free, but Astrid was an unmovable force on top of her, pinning her down as she drew a bloody mark on her own pale forehead. Astrid began to speak, low and fast, and in that other tongue. Lila struggled frantically now and tried to scream, attempting to interrupt the spell. But the Queen's long fingers clamped over her mouth, and Astrid's spell spilled out, taking shape in the air around them. A spike of ice shot through Lila, her skin prickling as the magic rippled over her. And above her, the Queen's face began to change. Her chin sharpened and her cheeks warmed from porcelain to a healthier hue. Her lips reddened and her eyes darkened from blue to brown, two different shades. And her hair, once as white as snow and wound about her head, now fell down onto her face, chestnut brown, and chopped in a sharp line along her jaw. Even her clothes rippled and shifted and took on an all too familiar form. The queen smiled a lifelike grin. And Lila gazed up in horror, not at Astrid Dane, but at the mirror image of herself. When Astrid spoke, Lila's own voice poured out.
"I'd better go," she said. "I'm sure Kel could use a hand."
Lila swung a last desperate punch, but Astrid caught her wrist as if it were nothing more than a nuisance and pinned it against the floor. She bent her head over Lila's, bringing her lips to her ear.
"Don't worry," she whispered. "I'll give him your regards."
And then Astrid slammed Lila's head back against the ruined floor, and Lila's world went dark. Kel stood in the stone courtyard, surrounded by broken statues, a dead king, and a jagged piece of black stone. He was bleeding and broken, but he was still alive. He let the ruined royal sword slip through his fingers and clatter to the ground, and drew a shuddering breath, the cold air burning his lungs and fogging in front of his bloody lips. Something was moving through him, warm and cool, lulling and dangerous. He wanted to stop fighting, wanted to give in, but he couldn't. It wasn't over yet. Half of the stone pulsed against his palm. The other half glinted on the ground where the serpent had dropped it. It called to him, and Kel's body moved of its own accord toward the missing piece. The stone guided his fingers down to the splintered ground and closed them around the fragment of rock waiting there. The moment the two pieces met, Kel felt words form on his lips.
"As Hasarai!"
He said the command, spilling out on its own in a voice that was and wasn't his. In his hand, the two halves of the stone began to heal. The pieces fused back together, the cracks untracing themselves until the surface was a smooth, unblemished black. And in its wake, an immense power, clear, beautiful and sweet, poured through Kel's body, bringing with it a sense of right. A sense of whole. It filled him with calm, with quiet. The simple, steady rhythm of magic pulled him down like sleep. All Kel wanted to do was to let go, to disappear into the power and darkness and peace.
"Give in," said a voice in his head.
His eyes drifted shut and he swayed on his feet. And then he heard Lila's voice calling his name. The stillness rippled as Kel forced his eyes open and he saw her descending the stairs. She seemed far away. Everything seemed far away.
"Kel,"
she said again as she reached him. Her eyes took in the scene, the ruined courtyard, Athos's corpse, his own battered form and the talisman, now whole.
"It's over," she said. "It's time to let it go."
He looked down at the talisman in his hand, at the way the black threads had thickened and become like rope, wrapping around his body.
"Please," said Lila. "I know you can do this. I know you can hear me."
She held out her hand, eyes wide with worry. Kel frowned, power still coursing through him, distorting his vision, his thoughts.
"Please,"
she said again.
"Lila,"
he said softly, desperately. He reached out and steadied himself on her shoulder.
"I'm here,"
she whispered.
"Just give me the stone."
He considered the talisman. And then his fingers closed over it and smoke whispered out. He didn't have to speak. The magic was in his head now, and it knew what he wanted. Between one instant and the next, the smoke became a knife. He stared down at the metal's glinting edge.
"Lila," he said again.
"Yes, Kel?"
His fingers tightened on it.
"Catch!"
And then he drove the blade into her stomach. Lila let out a gasp of pain, and then her whole body shuddered, rippled, and became someone else's. It stretched into the form of Astrid Dane, dark blood blossoming against her white clothes.
How?
She growled, but Kell willed her body still, her jaw shut. No words, no spell would save her now. He wanted to kill Astrid Dane. But more than that, he wanted her to suffer. For his brother, his prince. Because in that moment, staring into her wide blue eyes, all he could see was Rai. Rai wearing her talisman. Rai flashing a smile that was too cruel and too cold to be his own. Rai curling his fingers around Kel's throat and whispering in his ear with someone else's words. Rai thrusting a knife into his stomach. Rai, his Rai, crumpling to the stone floor. Rai bleeding. Rai dying. Kell wanted to crush her for what she'd done. And in his hands the want became a will, and the darkness began to spread out from the knife buried in her stomach. It crawled over her clothes and under her skin and turned everything it touched a pale white stone. Astrid tried to open her mouth to speak or to scream, but before any sound could escape her clenched teeth, the stone had reached her chest, her throat, her faded red lips. It overtook her stomach, trailed down her legs and over her boots before running straight into the pitted ground. Kell stood there, staring at the statue of Astrid Dane, her eyes frozen wide with shock, lips drawn into a permanent snarl. She looked like the rest of the courtyard now. But it wasn't enough. As much as he wanted to leave her there in the broken garden with her brother's corpse, he couldn't. Magic, like everything, faded. Spells were broken. Astrid could be free again one day. And he couldn't let that happen. Kell gripped her white stone shoulder. His fingers were bloody like the rest of him, and the Antari magic came as easily as air.
"As Steno!" he said.
Deep cracks formed across the queen's face, jagged fissures carving down her body, and when his fingers tightened, the stone statue of Astrid Dane shattered under his touch. 5. Kell shivered, the strange calm settling over him again. It was heavier this time. And then someone called his name, just as they had moments earlier, and he looked up to see Lila clutching her shoulder as she half ran, half limped down the stairs, bruised and bloody but alive. Her black mask hung from his bloody fingers.
"You all right?"
she asked when she reached him.
"Never better,"
he said, even though it was taking every ounce of his strength to focus his eyes on her, his mind on her.
"How did you know?"
she asked, looking down at the rubble of the queen.
"How did you know she wasn't me?"
Kell managed an exhausted smile.
"Because she said please."
Lila stared at him aghast.
"Is that a joke?"
Kell shrugged slightly. It took a lot of effort.
"I just knew," he said.
"You just knew,"
she echoed. Kell nodded. Lila took him in with careful eyes, and he wondered what he must look like in that moment.
"You look terrible," she said. "You better get rid of that rock."
Kell nodded.
"I could come with you."
Kell shook his head.
"No, please. I don't want you to."
It was the honest answer. He didn't know what waited on the other side, but whatever it was, he would face it alone.
"Fine," said Lila, swallowing. "I'll stay here."
"What will you do?"
he asked. Lila forced a shrug.
"Saw some nice ships on the dock when we were running for our lives. One of them will do."
"Lila,
I'll be okay,"
she said tightly.
"Now hurry up before someone notices we've killed the monarchs."
Kell tried to laugh, and something shot through him like pain, but darker. He doubled over, his vision blurring.
"Kell?"
Lila dropped to her knees beside him.
"What is it? What's happening?"
"No," he pleaded with his body. "No. Not now.
He was so close, so close. All he had to do was... Another wave sent him to his hands and knees.
Kel! Demanded Lila. Talk to me!
He tried to answer, tried to say something, anything, but his jaw locked shut, his teeth grinding together. He fought the darkness, but the darkness fought back. And it was winning. Lila's voice was getting further and further away.
Kel! Can you hear me? Stay with me. Stay with me.
Stop fighting, said a voice in his head. You've already lost.
No, thought Kel. No, not yet.
He managed to bring his fingers to the shallow gash across his stomach and began to draw a mark on the cracked stone. But before he could press his stone-bound hand against it, a force slammed him backward to the ground. The darkness twined around him and dragged him down. He fought against the magic, but it was already inside him, coursing through his veins. He tried to tear free of its hold, to push it away, but it was too late. He took one last gasp of air, and then the magic dragged him under. Kel couldn't move. Shadows wove around his limbs and held like stone, pinning him still. The more he fought, the tighter they coiled, leeching the last of his strength. Lila's voice was far, far away, and then gone, and Kel was left in a world filled with only darkness. A darkness that was everywhere. And then somehow it wasn't. It drew itself together, coiling in front of him, coalescing until it was first a shadow and then a man. He was shaped like Kel, from his height and his hair to his coat, but every inch of him was the smooth and glossy black of the recovered stone.
"Hello, Kel," said the darkness, the words in neither English nor Arnesian nor Mactan, but the native tongue of magic.
And finally Kel understood. This was Vitari, the thing that had been pulling at him, pushing to get in, making him stronger while weakening his will and feeding on his life.
"Where are we?"
he asked, his voice hoarse.
"We are in you," said Vitari. "We are becoming you."
Kel struggled uselessly against the dark ropes.
"Get out of my body!"
he growled. Vitari smiled his shadowy black smile and took a step toward Kel.
"You fought well," he said.
"But the time for fighting is over."
He closed the gap and brought a hand to Kel's chest.
"You were made for me, Antari," he said. "A perfect vessel. I will wear your skin forever."
Kel twisted under his touch. He had to fight. He'd come so far. He couldn't give up now.
"It's too late," said Vitari. "I already have your heart."
At that, his fingertips pressed down and Kel gasped as Vitari's hand passed into his chest. He felt Vitari's fingers close around his beating heart, felt it lurch, darkness spilling across his tattered shirt front like blood.
"It's over, Kel," said the magic. "You're mine."
Kel's body shuddered on the ground. Lila took his face in her hands. It was burning up. The veins on his throat and at his temple had darkened to black, and the strain showed in the lines of his jaw. But he wasn't moving, wouldn't open his eyes.
"Fight this!" she shouted as his body spasmed. "You've come all this way? You can't just give up!"
His back arched against the ground, and Lila pushed open Kel's shirt and saw black spreading over his heart.
"Damn it!"
she swore, trying to pry the stone out of his hand. It wouldn't budge.
"If you die," she snapped, "what happens to Rye?"
Kel's back hit the ground, and he let out a labored breath. Lila had recovered her weapons, and now she freed her knife, weighing it up in her palm.
She didn't want to have to kill him, but she could. And she didn't want to cut off his hand, but she certainly would. A groan escaped between his lips.
"Don't you fucking give up, Kel!"